Chutz HaChazal, a midrash, it's the left column, second paragraph. The year is Tuf Resh Lamed Vav. It's the last mimer of Tuf Resh Lamed Vav. It starts off the midrash. The midrash says, Hamarba Kavod Shemayim, a person who increases the glory and the honor of heaven, Umama'id Kavod Atzmo, and he decreases the honor, his own honor, and his own glory, Kavod Shemayim Mithrabe, then the honor of heaven is increased, Ukavodo Mithrabe, and his honor is increased too.
Paradox.
So that's the statement. Let's say one more time with a midrash. One who increases the honor of heaven and decreases his own personal honor. The honor of heaven is increased and his honor is increased as well. Mm-hmm. So that's a statement from the midrash, and now this Fasemis is going to comment on that. Umalo beribui kavod atzma. So what do we need? Why do we need the increase in kavod of himself? Why is that important for us? He's trying to decrease his honor and to be humble and trying to increase the kavod shemayim, but only one of his objectives was fulfilled, right? Heaven's honor was increased, but his own was increased too, so why is that an important thing? Who? Kidei sheyuchal yoser laharbos kavod shemayim. Says it is in order for him to be able to increase heaven's honor even more so. So in other words, the expansion of his kavod, because it's based on humility, will give him an even greater ability to increase the glory of heaven. But he's already proven himself worthy of doing that because he decreased his own honor. So Hashem says, okay, this is a person who could be rewarded with honor. And by rewarding him with honor, it will just give him more koah, more power to increase kavod shemayim. Ki kol makom sheha'adam, kol ma sheha'adam mevatel kavodo, kidei laharbos kavod shemayim. Because when a person is able to be humble about their own honor, literally means to nullify it, in order to bring honor to heaven, to God, Hare muchan l'kabel ha-kavod. This is the very person who is able to handle honor. He's the one you want to have honor. He's not involved with himself. He does not have a big ego. This is the person, Hashem, God will say, this man could have honor. This person could have honor. They know how to handle it. Ki alzeh nitin ha-kavod l'adam, kedei laharbos bo kavod shemayim. Because this is the true purpose for giving honor to a human being, in order for him or her to take that honor and give it to Hashem, to God. L'chein kavodo misrabe. Therefore, this individual's honor has increased. K'dei sheyihiye lo l'ma'et k'dei laharbos kavod shemayim. So that it will be, he is the one who is able to, as we said, minimize his own honor in order to increase heaven's. L'chein. Likewise, Misha Marbe Kavod Atzmo Hare Lo HaKavod L'ra. A person who's working on increasing their own glory and their own honor, somebody who's after it now, the other side of the picture here, says, on the contrary, says, this guy, honor is not going to be good for him because it just feeds into what he's doing, and Hashem knows that, you know, this guy cannot handle honor. It's going to take him right out of reality. L'chein not l'mimenu ha-kavod. So from this person, they take honor away. That's a really beautiful insight into people, into how Hashem looks at people and what we do with honor and glory, and knowing who is able to carry it well and who is able not to carry it well. When a person is striving for that, and that's their chief motivation, of course, you know, nobody is, except for a great tzaddik, is absolutely pure in their motivations, right? Everybody has a certain level of kavod or honor or prestige that they're trying to get. But he's saying here that if a person's primary motivation is for something good, and their humility is for the sake of something great, that person's able to honor, to handle honor well.
Right.
Yes, Nisan.
I know this is from a midrash. What part of the parsha of the Midbar is it trying to tie into?
I don't know.
Well?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know where the tie is here.
I mean, I know that there's kavod involved in naming the names of the tribes,
right,
taking the census.
Right, there's a couple of possibilities here.
Yeah.
But I did not see the midrash inside, so I don't know the tie to the parsha.
I wonder if he also is learning it in connection with the Mishnah Navas Eiz of Mikluba.
The Rabbeinu HaKadosh mi Lublin Zal, the Chose of Lublin, dictate B'mashu Kasuv Kavod Shemayim Misrabe. The Chose, he was medakdek, he was inferred through a careful reading of this midrash where it says the honor and glory of heaven will be increased. What did he learn from that? Ma kamash malan bezeh. Bevadai kishemarbe kavod shemayim harehu mithrabe. So certainly, when a person does things to increase the glory and the honor of heaven, of God, then it is increased. Rak shelo yachu sha'adam sha'al yedei Bizui Kavodo, Vahu Tamid Chacham Has Vishalom, Yisma'et Kavod Hatora. One should not be concerned, one should not be afraid that by actually taking away from one's own honor, if he is a learned person and a scholarly person, then maybe, God forbid, that actually takes away from the honor of the Torah. But there's a certain noble motivation one might have in saying, okay, you know, I can certainly get by with decreasing my own honor. However, I'm a person of stature in the community. I'm known as a wise person. If I take that too far, then maybe even separating myself from it, maybe it's not proper for the position that I hold. Of course, that can be a tricky motivation or question because it's so hard to separate those things. But let's say someone could. So this person is saying, yeah, myself, my honor, I can contain that and I can decrease that, but what about Kavod HaTorah? What about the honor of the Torah that I represent? Azeh Ne'amar Kavod Shemayim Misrabe Bevadai. So the Midrash says, most certainly the glory of heaven is going to be increased. Av Shemema'ed Kavod Atzmo. Even if you do decrease your own honor, don't worry. This is talking to a high-level person here. Somebody who's concerned that, you know, their position in the true sense is so important that they shouldn't minimize its honor. So the Chose says, you know what? Even for somebody like you, it's okay. If your intent is to increase the glory of heaven, of Hashem, it's all right. Don't worry about your position. It's okay. Kevan shekavanaso l'shem shemayim laharbos kavoda yisparach kanal. Since your true motive and your pure motive is to serve heaven, even though it may appear that it's taking away from the kavod haTorah and the position that you honor, nonetheless, it's okay. Go ahead. Be humble, and God's glory will be expanded. This is a very important thing because in halacha, in the halachas of a Talmud Chacham, a person who's a scholar and a Talmud Chacham learned person, there are situations where one is not supposed to be forgiving on their honor, not for themselves, but because of the position that they maintain. There are actually dinim about that. So he's addressing that. You know, there's a halacha involved here. One would say, I can't minimize my own honor. I'm a Rosh Yeshiva, or I'm a Rosh Kol, I'm a Rav, I can't. So I say, well, in certain situations you can't.
What would be a situation where he couldn't? Just a concrete situation where a Rosh Yeshiva might say, this would be an inappropriate way or moment in which to decrease my honor.
Let's say that somebody had publicly insulted them.
Okay.
All right. So as a human being, he's willing to say, I forgive you. The guy comes over, asks forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
As a human being, as an individual Jew, I forgive you. Right. More than willing. However, right, this was in the presence of the community. You've insulted the position of the community.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there has to be a consideration of that. Doesn't mean he shouldn't be forgiven, but a more public apology may be required in that case,
mm-hmm.
because the position is at stake.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, it's possible he shouldn't be as quick to be forgiving, because it's not that you're letting the guy off the hook easy. We're not concerned about that.
Yeah, but you're protecting
the
honor
of the position. Right, and he needs to know what that's all about,
mm-hmm.
as does the community who was, let's say, witness to that insult.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Efrain.
What if it's something less blatant, like sometimes at a wedding, you know, a Rosh Hashiva would come, but you might not give him a kavod at the chuppah because, you know, your hometown rabbi is there or something like that, and you're setting someone of lower knowledge above someone. Is that the same kind of situation? I mean, you wouldn't want to be doing that, but how would this apply? You know, he's asking about concrete examples. What about when it's not as serious as it's happening?
Right. Well, in that situation, which does come up, you know, those Chasn is a good example of that. It's pretty much understood, you know, that if a person has, or a family has a relationship with their rabbi or their rav for a long time, that they're going to look to that person for their seder or kedushin and to officiate. If the Rosh Yeshiva is there then, a person of community stature, it would be their responsibility to give him a high honor. It doesn't mean they have to ask their Rav or their, let's say their Rosh Yeshiva, maybe is not as great a Rosh Yeshiva, to entirely step away.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if the Godel Hador, you know, came in, that would be different, and everybody would be, you know, willing to hand over that honor, although they probably would be too humble to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's understood, that as long as the honor is given, and there would be an effort to show this is a Rosh Yeshiva, he's not my Rav, we don't have the relationship, but I'm going to give him, you know, a high honor of reading the Ksuba, an aid, one of the Shavuot Brachos, then that's fulfilled, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Those situations can get a little sticky. Everybody's covered has to be taken into account.
And what you didn't say is that you should offer that Rosh Yeshiva and you should expect that he should be humble enough to turn it down so that then it's okay.
Right.
You're not saying
not
that,
necessarily. Right? You know, although you have that sometimes too, and it's hard to say if that's orchestrated. I remember one particular chasna where it was actually announced that the Rosh Yeshiva was honored mm-hmm. with the Seder Kedushin, and he, the Rosh Yeshiva, would like to give the Seder Kedushin honor over to this rabbi who was the Rav of that of their family. And they actually announced it like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way.
And the rabbi insists that he go back to the Rosh
Hashiva. And they're still arguing. And never got married.
Talk about waiting at the altar.
look who the teacher
right,
couple
right,
that
right.
Right. At an out-of-town possible, and he, somebody came in who insisted on the substitution, and he gave it up. In that case,
right. Great people are not homemade usually on those things, because the truly great people, as we just learned, their greatness lies in their humility.
Well, they're not owned in period.
They're
whole things.
They're not owned in period.
Yeah, seriously, I often wonder if there is an order. See, where I come from, you know, we only, in more or less traditional service, you only have a single, you know, clergyman. They didn't have all this people lining up.
Just one person does the whole thing.
The whole thing, right. People lining up. So that's why I want to know if there was a procedure as far as who takes precedent over who. You know what I mean? That's written down.
There is a general, it's not written down, but there's a general
yeah.
knowledge. You have the Masada tradition is the highest honor. The one who reads the Ksuba is next.
Number two, yeah.
And then the Eidik. In Yeshiva circles,
yeah,
the Eidei Kedushin are next after that. In other circles, that would be one of the Sheva Brachos, and then the Eidei Kedushin.
Oh, okay.
That's pretty much the order of it.
Oh, okay.
Why is there a difference in yeshiva circles?
Yeah, why?
I don't know why, but they hold that to be an aid kedushin when the chassan gives the ring to the kallah and says harei ad mekudeshesli, they hold that to be like a higher honor than one of the Sheva Brachos. And that's not necessarily the case in other circles, but I don't know why specifically. It is a high honor.
What do we normally hold?
We look more at Sheva Brachos as the higher honor than the Eid Kedushin.
I think that when the Rabbi Hanuman Salafishim talked about the importance, by way of illustration, he said, not that he meant it entirely seriously, but he said that even a Masada Kedushin could be a non-Jew as long as the Eidei Kedushin are from a Yiddish. It's a contract, and the Eidim have to be kosher, even if nobody else does.
Right.
So I think that's why, because
Masada Kedushin could be a non-Jew.
He can't say brachas, but he was making a point that what really marries the people is that you give the ring in front of two witnesses, regardless of who else is there.
Right. So the reason that the Adim might have lower status is because like in Europe, where you couldn't always be sure of the conscience of everybody that might show up for a hostel, that the Masada Kedushin, who was usually the rabbi of the town, had two guys he knew were kosher for Adam, and he'd pull them out and he'd say, these two are going to be it, and forget what you might think. So,
sure.
In other words, the rest of the people would say, well, anybody like Joe Fermi over here can be an aid, then we should give the honors to somebody else.
Right. But my father was in the rabbinate over the course of years. He did many marriages for people who were not Shomer Shabbos, not Orthodox people, and didn't have any family members who necessarily were. So he used to have a pool of a couple of, four or five men that he would call upon to be aidim, at a wedding, and call them on a Sunday or a Saturday night, and they'd be available to come over. They weren't invited to the wedding, but they'd be witness. They'd be a witness along with my father to make the kedushin kosher. Sure.
The aidim, if you found that one of them, let's say, wasn't
right. Then that would be an invalid marriage.
That automatically becomes an invalid marriage.
Right. Now, what would be the halachic issue there is, let's say at the chuppah, you have two eidim, and they're the official witnesses, right? There are other people there who are watching, right? But they're not considered to be eidim, right? But they happen to be watching. If it turned out that one of those witnesses was not valid, right, then as long as another Orthodox Jewish man over the age of 13, saw that happen, that would be a valid kedushin, because he was there and he saw it. Now, sometimes nowadays, what they do is kind of more of a recent occurrence. They make an announcement that these are the two witnesses to the exclusion of everybody else, because they want Badavka to designate these witnesses. It's like a chumra somewhat to look at like that. Then you could have a problem the other way if you end up saying that, because you're excluding the other people from being witnesses. Now, Lamai say if it really is a problem, if that should happen, I don't know. But in general, the way we would hold is that as long as it was witnessed by two people, if one of those witnesses was invalid and somebody else saw it who was valid, that would be okay.
There was in recent times a fairly famous person who had was a well-known figure teaching Torah and had their own yeshiva that turned out not to be Jewish.
Right.
And he's just
That person was always of questionable content, but just by the way.
Yeah.
In stronger circles, that person had never crossed the line of being truly accepted.
Yes. I also want to point out in Sephardic Minhag.
Although they didn't know he was a guy.
Yeah.
That they didn't know. They knew they suspected.
They
suspected a lot of what he was doing, but that was a big shock. Yes.
But can you imagine if somebody had honored, it could very well have happened.
He was an aide or something
like
that.
Consequences are stacked. Right.
Yeah.
In the Sephardic Minhag, in many Sephardic Hasnos, The role of the Aiden is a bit more secondary, because they already have done the Ksuba work beforehand.
No, they actually do the Ksuba up under the chuppah.
They do? They, yes. Oh, they actually yeah,
we
do. So
do
that's
it
more
important.
We do more it before.
They do it at the chuppah, right?
So then, then I'll switch it around. So in other words, the Aiden and the Ashkenaz Minhag factor is more of a secondary. So there,
well, those are two separate things, really, you're talking about. Because
yeah, okay.
The two guys who signed the Ksuba, they signed the wedding contract. That's
right,
one set of Aiden.
Yeah.
Then, but they're not the Aiden Kedushin.
Uh-huh.
That's not what marries those people. That
okay.
just makes that document legal.
Right.
The people who witnessed the giving of the ring, those are the Aiden Kedushin. And by anybody's minhag, that's done under the chuppah.
Okay.
Remember the wedding we went to that was that Sephardic
yeah.
wedding? Okay.
Yeah.
And how before the wedding they did basically a kinyan of buying back the bride, because that's what they did. Because so they had some kind of minhag and they
yeah.
tried to steal the bride and this and they had the.
I wasn't there for
okay,
that.
Well, that's
so
what they
I
did.
Missed
okay.
that.
That's what they did. They did an exchange of gifts.
Who
a
did?
Monetary value at the. At Levi's son's
wedding.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't there for that.
So, when they did that before the wedding, before they got there, they did it. They had a ceremony. They do it, and then they came into the chasana. That exchange was a monetary value exchange. And that exchange there is that like.
I have no idea what that is. I'm not familiar with that at all. I have no idea.
But if you had two witnesses watch that, wouldn't that be?
I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was.
That's my question.
I don't know what it was, so I can't comment. I'm just not familiar with it at all.
I didn't really think about it until just now.
Okay, I'm just not familiar with the bichlal. Okay, let's take a look at another one. Yes,
someone loses their ketubah.
Yeah.
So the aiding that. Are
there when they get a new ketubah, what do they call it? They would also be Aiden Ksuba. Yeah, you get a replacement ksuba. If a couple loses their ksuba, they're still married. There's a rabbinic, there's a derabbanan. It's like an Easter that a bride and groom, a husband and wife, excuse me, should not be intimate without having a ksuba. So you should get your ksuba replaced, but you're definitely married. That's called a ksuba de irfisa, which means a replacement of ksuba for one that was lost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then you write it up and then you say that the text of that is that this couple was married at such and such a time with kosher witnesses. They lost their ksuba.
Mm-hmm.
And now on this date, in this city, in this time, we are signing again, attesting to the fact that they lost their ksuba and this is replacing it. And then you go through the lesson of the ksuba again.
The idea that husband and wife shouldn't be intimate if they don't have a ketubah, is that explained halachically or mystically?
Halachically.
Because
yeah. There's it's not that in any way it would be like, let's say a child was born from that relation.
Right.
It doesn't affect the child.
Right.
It's not anything like that.
But
there's a certain lack of
right,
that bond there. Right. They're fully married. Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
Right.
How's that lack understood halachically?
That the responsibilities are not spelled out in a legal document.
The
Chachamim didn't want people to treat that lightly.
Yeah.
That's my understanding of it. And they didn't want people to treat having a ksuba lightly. Because you can be married without a ksuba.
Right,
and
yeah.
You give a ring, you're married.
Right.
But they didn't want people to treat that lightly, so they made that injunction that you shouldn't be together intimately without a ksuba.
If you put it on disk and
scan it. Scan it.
No,
scan it into your computer.
No, because at that point, when you take it out of the computer, it now it's a printed document. The witnesses have to sign it by hand. You lost it. You could reprint it from a disc, but they still got it. Sign it by hand, right? Yeah. No different than buying a printed ksuba.
So much for the paperless society. Not in ours.
Right. We need certain papers. Okay, let's take a look at one more. Interesting discussion. Let's see if I can find something that we can directly relate to the. He quotes a lot of midrash here. Oh, here we go. page 11. It's the right column on the bottom. The year is Tuf Resh Mem Vav. It's the first Maimer of that year, Tuf Resh Mem Vav. The Midrash.
The one that begins for Midrash.
Right. but it does quote the Pasuk. We know the connection. Isha Diglo, each person camped according to his flag or his banner. We know each Shevet had a different banner. So the Midrash says, Nisavu b'nei Yisrael l'dugolim k'malachei hashoreis. The Jewish people desire to have flags, to have banners, like the angels above have banners. Because it says at Matan Torah, when we were given the Torah, that they perceived that the heaven, the hosts of heaven, the angels in Shemayim, that they had banners, whatever that means. So B'nai Yisrael wanted to have banners too. They desired that. And it quotes, Yamale Hashem Kol Mishal Asefa. God fulfills all the things that you desire. And B'nai Yisrael then were given banners and flags that represented their each Shevet. So that's the Midrash.
Does the Midrash look at this as a good thing, a good taiva?
Yes. Yeah, because they wanted to emulate a certain structure that was present in Shemayim. Yeah. It's taken as a compliment.
Is this the same lesson as when we sing Shamalachim on Friday night, Malachi Asharis?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Now, what does that mean again?
Malachi Asharis? They serve. The angels who serve, administer. Serving is a better word. You know, they serve Hashem's will, carry out Hashem's will.
I always thought it was bureaucratic.
Right, like the modern ministry, the Tsar.
Right, same word. Ki Hamalach Nikra Omei, we know that an angel is called one who stands. That means to say, a Malach, although it's a very holy being, but it has no growth. It has a certain task, it's a stationary task assigned by God. It knows exactly what Hashem wants, so it is very holy, but it's standing. Shehu miyuchad lishlichus bifrat, because an angel has a very specific task that it carries out, and God assigns the task. Not that God needs it, we know that's a philosophical point, but Hashem wanted to create that world that way, so this is the structure. The adam nikra mahalich, whereas a human being is called one who walks, we move. A malach stands stationary, a person moves, we grow, we expand. Al yidei shetzorich lahasig hashlemus ma'at ma'at. Because a person's attainment of completeness, of being a whole human being, occurs gradually. It's a slow process, mm-hmm. ma'at ma'at, step by step. V'achar kach kishemitake na'atzmo kura'ui. Then, when a person has truly reached the completeness of their task, they've accomplished what they were supposed to do here. Holech la'olam ha'elyon. Then you travel again. You travel to a higher world. We leave this world, we die, and go on to a higher world. Ach, b'nei Yisrael nis'avu el hashlemus. The Jewish people desired that shlemus, you might say, that final product, that final level that people arrive at when their life is over. The Jewish people in the Midbar, they wanted to achieve their task. They wanted to fulfill their mission here in the world. So he says, that's what it means that they desired that. V'zachu l'zeh b'matana. That's what it means they desired the banners of the angel. The banner representing that an angel fulfills its task, always. It's doing what it's supposed to do. That's what we desired. The idea that we could complete wholly our task. That's what it means we desired it. Yeah. Therefore, v'zachu l'zeh b'matana. We merited this as a gift. In a certain respect, God says, okay, you desired something good, I will give it to you as a gift. U'kamochein yesh zmanim. Likewise, there are times. Shazochin ha'tachtonim l'zeh. Where even those who live in the lower worlds, us, we can merit something like the final outcome. Now, he doesn't mean to say that we're truly done, because then we continue to have choice and to grow slowly. But he says there is an aspect of the final outcome, of the final shlemus that people and the world attain, that can touch us every once in a while. V'chein b'Shabbos Kodesh, likewise on the holy day of Shabbos, shenikra matona tova, which is called a gift. Shabbos is called a gift. So really, we have to work for that final stage. We can't get it for free. Hashem put us here with freedom of choice. We're working for it. But every once in a while, if we really desire it properly, Hashem says, all right, I'm going to give you a little touch of that final outcome as a gift. I'll give you a little touch. And then it goes away and we continue along our way. So there is a contact with the end somewhere along the way. It's also, of course, something that I think keeps people motivated, that it can happen. It's there. Yes, Misa?
Would that be what we term today an epiphany?
I guess in the proper context, you know, that we...
Not could, an ultimate, you know, epiphany.
Yeah.
Just sort of those moments of clarity, as Shlomo Porter once described about how, like, you're... He said it's like you're driving in the dark in the rain in the woods, and not only do you have no idea where you are, but you fear for your life, you know, and you're alone, no map. And then all of a sudden you just have this intuition you should stop. And the moment you stop, this gigantic momentary lightning bolt lights up everything around you, and you discover at that moment that you're actually in a place where you have perfect clarity around you, and the path becomes momentarily lit, and it's just that.
And then you can proceed.
And then
that's
you can
nice
proceed.
Example.
You go on. You're still pretty much muddled and in the dark,
but
you've gotten that moment of clarity that allows you to continue to move forward without the struggle and the lack of emunah.
It's a nice mushroom. I'm going to file that one away from Rabbi.
The Rambam comes from the Rambam.
Does it?
Yeah. Very nice. Yeah, on the pasuk in. Mishle, a ksil bechoshech
oleh.
He said he had one 25 years ago. He's been going on it ever since.
waiting for the next one, right?
I've been going since gas prices were 15 cents a gallon.
So how can you say it's a good thing that they would want a bagel at that moment for that kind of reason? Because look where they were. I mean, I can see they needed for national identity or distinguishing one tribe from the other or kind of things. But the chutzpah of saying we think we're entitled to this taste of our task being done the way the angels have completed their task when they aren't even in the land yet. They're not even building a temple yet.
I don't think that he's saying they thought they were entitled to it, but that they aspired. They aspired. That was an aspiration. And it was such a lofty and good aspiration that Hashem said, you know what? I'm going to give you a little bit of it.
Hashem said, you have it.
Matana Tova. It was a very fine and upright aspiration. I'm going to give you as a gift a little bit of what it's like.
Thank you. I miss you. Thank you.
Because truly, we have to work for it.
Thank you.
It's called a gift because Hashem said, okay, even though you haven't gotten there yet, but you desired something good.
Before we go, next Thursday, you and Aphis Erev Shavuos. Are you having a shiur?
I am planning on having a shiur next Thursday, yeah. Erev Shavuos, yeah.
Okay.
Still do it, yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, if I change that, we'll make a phone tree and give you phone calls. But so far,
so
I would like to do it, yeah.
Okay.
The day is long enough that it should be possible.
All right.
As long as you get all the cheesecake ingredients early enough.
just want to check, okay.
Okay. Achsrichim liro shazos hu b'matana. Now when a person has received that gift, which is a little bit of the final accomplishment, one has to see that it is a gift. We, the recipients, have to be aware that it's a gift. V'leida ulahakir es mekoma. And to still recognize and appreciate our humanness, our state as human beings, lahalof, to keep growing. To keep walking, not to assume I'm done. No. Complacency. Limso hashlemus mitzad atzmo, and then to find and work for the shlemus from their own efforts. But once we're touched by that little feeling or perception of what the end is like, don't stop. You know, that's just keeping us along the path. Recognize it's a gift and then keep growing. Keep moving. Ukishoda makirzos, when a person does recognize this, that they still need to choose and to grow, then God won't prevent, he won't hold back the gift. If he knows we're going to keep growing, he's going to give us a little bit of it. The inference is there that if we're going to get it and then stop growing, God's going to hold it back. That's the hint of the next phrase there in the pasuk. Each person in his own camp. Afa pishahu al diglo, Isha Machaneh means a person remains in the human camp. That we're aware of the fact that we have to constantly keep growing and choosing. So even though that it's Ish Al Diglo, even though each person is at his banner, which represents the final goal, the final accomplishment, that's what the banner represents, still, Ish Al Machaneh. Remember, stay in the human camp. Keep growing, keep striving. So that's the beautiful pshat of the two statements, Ish Al Machaneh, Ish Al Diglo. Each person in his camp, each person by his banner. The camp, the awareness that I'm human, I have to keep growing. The banner, that little glimpse of the final outcome. And that's what it means, v'zehu yimalei kom yishal esecha, that God will fulfill your request, it meaning if we follow that guideline. B'kmochein b'shabbos, ham'aneg es ha-shabbos, nosnin lo mat mishal es-liva. Likewise, it says in respect to Shabbos, this is a Gemara, a person who gives delight to Shabbos, he gives delight to Shabbos, that person is given the desires of their heart from God. Ukamochein, b'chanu b'nei Yisrael, shahadigolim hayu histabkus b'shara sha'ayan. When the Jewish people camped, what it was referring to on a higher level is camping, it's a new definition of camping, referring to the higher soul, the source of the soul of every Jew and of every tribe, that it was camped, it was pitched in the right place, connected up there in Shemayim. Kamo b'Shabbos Kodesh, likewise on Shabbos, when we camp, on Shabbos Sheyesh Aliyah L'chol Ha'olamos V'Nikra Menucha, every level of reality is elevated on Shabbos. It's one of the basic spiritual principles of Shabbos. Every level of reality is elevated and attached to its source, and that's truly what it means that Shabbos is Menucha, is rest. Rest means to be connected to one source. The Chazal Ramzu B'zeh Shalom Nisracha Ku Yoser Mitchum Shabbos Shoyu Samuchin L'Harom. The Chachamim hinted at this because they said the camp of the Jewish people, which was around the Mishkan, their camp was not further than the tomb of Shabbos, the boundary that a person can walk outside of their city on Shabbos. It was within 2,000 amos. So the remez was that each person camps in the right place. Mm-hmm. There's a connection of their higher identity, their higher banner, to its source in Shemayim. And just as Shabbos is the day when everybody is elevated, by camping in the rightful place, recognizing their makom in the world, that allowed for their neshama to be connected in its rightful place up above.
Peter
Scott.
Thank
you. Dov just mentioned that what the very first Zemira that you sing Friday night, Kol Mekadei Shvi, Karoi Lo, Kosher Meshabbat Kedas Bechala, it says, Isha Machaneh V'Isha Digla. Matan Machaneh, again, a gift.
Do we have...
Shkoach.